And one of them said, let's at least buy him a donkey, that he should have the donkey to put the bags of flax on, and instead of schlepping on his back the heavy bags, he'll put them on the donkey. A donkey's very strong. It's like having a car. In those days, there was no cars. Like you have a car. You put all the packages in the car, and you drive the car. It's much easier than carrying them by yourself down the street a long way. So let's buy our Rebbe a donkey, and that'll help him with his heavy load. But first we have to ask a Rebbe Rishus. First we ask, you know, because maybe he's not going to feel good if we buy him a donkey without any kind of asking. He doesn't want to receive any kind of a gift for free. There's a certain thing about a person should not want a thing for free. He should not want a gift. It says that a person that does not like to receive gifts, he only likes to work for things, he will live a long life. And a person that wants to get things for free all the time, it's not such a good thing. Some people never want to receive anything for free. So they said, let's ask our Rebbe if we could give him a donkey. We'll ask him Rishus. They explained to the Rebbe, Rabbi Shimon Shetach, what they would like to do. Not Chas V'Shalom that they want to just give him something for free. They know that if he works, they know that if he has it a little bit easier in his work, he'll have more time and more koyach for Torah and mitzvahs. And the Rebbe said, okay. He agreed. I agree to let you buy me a donkey. And the students were very, very happy that they should do that. And now they went to the marketplace to find the donkey. Of course, they collected some money first, and they had the money with them. They went now to find a donkey. They went to the marketplace. Over there, people sell different things. And they found over there an Arab. And the Arab was calling out, who want to buy a donkey? Who want to buy a donkey? Oh, it looks like a nice donkey. They went over to the Arab. How much is that donkey? You pay good price, you get good donkey. You pay $10. $10 you pay for donkey, you get a good donkey. $10? Oh, let's count how much money we have. They counted the money. They had $10. You get a good donkey, a good price, $10 you pay. Okay? Here's the $10. And they took now the donkey from the Arab. And they're bringing the donkey now. They're leading him with a rope around his neck. They're leading him to the Rebbe that he should be able to use the donkey. As they're walking down the road, one of the Talmidim happened to be looking at the donkey to see just exactly what kind of a donkey they have. And he looks closely around his neck, and he sees there's like a string tied around his neck. Besides the rope that they were leading him with, there was a string tied around his neck, and on the bottom of the string was like a little package. And you could hardly see it because, you know, the donkey has hair, like a little beard over there, and the little package was hiding in the donkey's hair, and you could hardly see it. But this Talmid happened to see this little package on the string. And he says, wait, what is this little package hanging on the string on the donkey's neck? They stopped. They took off the little package. They opened it up. Inside was a diamond. A diamond was in this package. How did this diamond get there? Well, they figured out. Probably this Arab did not know about this package, or else why wouldn't he take it for himself? Probably this Arab bought a donkey from somebody, and now he sold it for some more money. And that person, whoever had the donkey before the Arab, had probably hidden that diamond over there, and something had happened, he wasn't able to get it. The Arab never knew the diamond was over there. Or maybe the Arab knew the diamond was there, he forgot for some reason, who knows. But whatever it was, they certainly got a special deal for $10, a donkey with a diamond, or a diamond with a donkey. A diamond's worth many more times than a donkey. Well, they were so happy. They said, just think, we'll give the diamond to our Rebbe. He'll have so much money, he'll never have to work again. He could sit and learn the whole day. He could build for himself a beautiful house. He could build for himself a shul. He could sit there and learn the whole day with all the svarim he wants and keep his family with good parnasa for the rest of his life till 120 years. He'll never have to schlep anything, even on a donkey anymore, with his one diamond. That's how much money we could get him for that diamond. They went to the Rebbe, Rebbe Shimon Shattach. And they said, Rebbe, here's the donkey. The Rebbe said, thank you very much. Rebbe, but what we found on the donkey is a diamond. Look, Rebbe, look what we found on the donkey, a beautiful diamond. And they were so excited, and they explained to the Rebbe all of their thoughts that they had about what they could do with the diamond. But they saw the Rebbe was not excited about this diamond. And he asked them, where did you get this diamond again? And they explained how they found it on the donkey. And they said, did the man who sold you the donkey, the Arab, did he know that he had a diamond on the donkey and he sold it to you? They said, well, he didn't mention anything about a diamond. Probably he didn't know. And Reb Shimon Shattach said, we bought a donkey, but we did not buy a diamond. The donkey is ours. The diamond is not ours. Take back the diamond to the Arab and give it back to him. And Kinalach, at first, they just couldn't believe it. But they knew their Rebbe was a big tzaddik, a ben Torah, a Talmud Chochem. And one thing about a Yid, Kinalach, a Yid is Erlach. You know what means Erlach? Honest. He does what the Torah says. He doesn't try to get away with anything. And he doesn't want to try to get anything for free that does not belong to him. And they knew the Rebbe was only doing what the Torah said. They took back the diamond. They gave it to the Arab. And the Arab looked at the diamond. And his eyes got so big, they popped out of his head almost. He couldn't believe that they're giving him this diamond. And they explained where they got the diamond. And the Arab never even knew about it. But the Rebbe said that really it belongs to the Arab. And he should have it because it really belonged to him. And the Arab Kinalach, he looked up into the Shemayim and he put his hands up and he said, the Jews have a great Hashem that teaches such honesty to the Yidden, and you have such a great Rebbe and such a great Hashem. You're very, very lucky to have such a great Hashem and such a great Rebbe. And he said, thanks to Hashem. The Talmidim came back to the Rebbe, they told him what happened, and he said, it's better one Arab thanking Hashem than having 100 diamonds. It's better to have one person thanking Hashem than to have many, many diamonds and jewels. So he was very happy. It was in the summertime in Russia. In the summertime in Russia, they didn't have the kind of vacation that we have now in the summertime. The Kinalach went to Cheder, even in Tammuz, even in the summertime, they went to the Cheder. Two little boys are walking back from Cheder. One little boy was about 7 years old. His name was Zalman Aharon. And the other little boy, his name was Shalom Daivber. Now these two little boys grew up to be big tzaddikim. Zalman Aharon and Shalom Daivber are two sons of the Rebbe Maharash. Okay? We know that Shalom Daivber became the Rebbe Rishab. He was the younger son. And Zalman Aharon was a big Talmud Chacham and a big Chassid and a great person. And he was a year older than his brother, the Rebbe Rishab. Now they're walking back from Cheder when they're little boys, a long time ago, and they're talking. And they start talking about what is the difference between a Yid and a Goy. What's the difference? After all, a Yid and a Goy, they both have eyes and noses and ears, and they both walk on 2 feet, and they wear clothes, and they talk, and they eat, and I mean, they do all kinds of things. I mean, In fact, you know, some Yidden and some Goyim Lahavdil, they look the same. They're both people. What is the difference between them? We know that a Yid and a Goy are different. What's the difference? So, Zalman Aharon said to his little brother, you know what the difference is? A Yid learns, and a Yid davens, and a Yid does mitzvahs, and a Goy doesn't. That's the difference. Makinalach, little Shalom Dov Ber said to his brother, yeah, you know, that's right for a lot of Yidden, but there are some Yidden, they don't daven so much, and they don't learn so much, and they don't do so much mitzvahs. There are such Yidden like that. So, what's the difference between those kind of Yidden and a Goy? They're still Yidden. So what's the difference between a Yid who doesn't daven and learn and do so many mitzvahs and a Goy? And Zalman Aharon really didn't have an answer. And they were now standing right by the yard of their house. And in the yard was their sister. And their sister was listening to the two little brothers talking. And she thought it was very interesting and very good that the two brothers are talking about such a Torah thing like that. And she ran to tell her Tati about what the two brothers are talking about. And the Tati, of course, was the Rebbe Marash. And he was learning Torah in a place in the yard that was like a sukkah. It wasn't really a sukkah, but it was a place that plants are growing over, and there's a tree over there, and it's a shady place. It feels almost like you're in a sukkah. Now, she told her Tati what the two boys were talking about. And she was also curious to find out, what's the answer to the question? What's the difference between a Yid and a Goy? So the Tati, the Rebbe Marash, told his daughter, tell your two brothers to come over to me. The two boys came over to the Rebbe Marash, their Tati, and the Rebbe Marash said, okay, now you're going to see the difference between a Yid and a Goy. Go call Ben Sion. Now Ben Sion was like a helper who helped the Rebbe Marash in the house, like a shamish, doing different things with his forum and with his room, and, you know, different things that a tzaddik many times has a helper to help him do things. And so Ben Sion came in now to the yard, and Ben Sion was a simple Yid. He wasn't a big Talmud Chachim. He could say Tehillim, he could read Aleph Beis, but sometimes even when he said Tehillim, he made mistakes, even in the Kudas, in a Chirik, or a Tzeda. And he didn't know that much Torah, but he tried whatever he could. A simple Yid. An Ish Pashit. No. And the Rebbe Marash said, Ben Sion, was machstu? How are you today? No, Baruch Hashem. He said, Ben Sion, did you eat today? Did I eat? Yeah, I ate. The Rebbe says, Ben Sion, did you eat good? He says, did I eat good? What do you mean, did I eat good? No, Baruch Hashem, I'm zat, I'm satisfied, I ate enough. The Rebbe says, Ben Sion, why did you eat? Why did you eat today? Ben Sion says, why did I eat? That I should live. I have to eat in order to live. The Rebbe says, Ben Sion, why do you live? You eat in order to live, so why do you live? Why do I live? He says, I live to serve Hashem, to learn some Torah, to say some Tehillim, to daven, to do a mitzvah. And he kvetched a little bit, like halavai, I should really be able to learn Torah good, and daven good, and say Tehillim good, and do mitzvahs good. But I try. That's why I live. Okay, Ben Sion, to Ken's gain. You can go. Ben Sion now left. And now the Rebbe says to go call Ivan. Ivan was a Goyisha worker who used to work also around the house, fixing the fence and taking care of the animals and doing different things and different jobs around and chopping wood and different things like this. They called Ivan. Ivan came, and the Rebbe says, Ivan, how are you today? Oh, fine, Rabbi, I feel good today. Oh, good. Ivan, did you eat today? Yeah, I ate. Did you eat good? Oh, yeah, I ate good. I had a good meal today, sure. I had a little maske too. Ivan, why did you eat? Why did I eat, Rabbi? I eat in order to live. Okay, Ivan, and why do you live? Why do I live? Listen, you know, later on, I'm done working, I'm going to have a good supper, and I'm going to have something very good to eat, and I think I'll have some more mashke, a good drink, and I'll feel good. Yeah, I'm going to feel very good. Okay, Ivan, you can go. Ivan left, and the Rebbe explained to his two sons and his daughter, this is the difference between a yid and a goy. A yid, even a simple yid, he lives, but he knows his life is in order to serve Hashem. Even he can't serve Hashem so great as he'd like to, and so be such a big tzaddik like he'd like to be. He knows his life is in order to serve Hashem. The life is to go higher. What did the goy say? Why does he eat? In order to live. And why does he live? In order to eat. And why does he eat? In order to live. And why does he live? He should be able to eat again and feel good. In other words, the life, it does not go higher than the body. You eat in order to live. Okay, you're alive, you have life. So now what do you do with your life? By a yid, Ben Zion, he knows the life is to go higher. Do something for Hashem. Connect yourself with your neshama. This is lifting up the life. By the goy, he doesn't have that neshama. He eats in order to live. He lives in order to eat. The body is in order to do now more for the body. This is the difference between a yid and a goy. Even a yid who doesn't have so many mitzvahs, since he has neshama, he feels the life of the body is not for the body, it's in order to be for the neshama. The goy who doesn't have the neshama, he does not feel this. Once there was a farmer, he had a field, he was getting ready his field for planting. And like we learned in Shabbos Halachos, the first thing you do to a field to get ready for planting is called Choyresh. Remember Choyresh? Now one of the things of Choyresh is plowing, which is digging up the field. And one of the things for Choyresh is where you throw off the rocks, you get off the rocks from the field because you cannot plant the field if it's covered with rocks. So by getting rid of the rocks, you're getting the field ready for planting. Most farmers, what do they do with the big rocks that are in the way in their field? Well, they carry them over to the side of the field, and they put them by the side of their field, and they use them for something. What can you do with those rocks? You build a fence, you build a wall, and you can make a nice wall out of all the rocks. Of course, you have to work hard doing it. You have to make the rocks to fit together nice and maybe cement them together so they stick. But after a while, if you work hard, you get a nice wall. This farmer did not make a wall with his rocks. In fact, he was too lazy to do that. He wanted to do something that was easier to do with his rocks. He had to get them off the field, but he didn't want to build a wall. He didn't want to use them for anything else or take them to his house and do something with them. What did he do with the rocks? He threw them in the road. He threw them out of his field onto the road where people go. Wagons go, people walk, animals go. He threw them in the road. He didn't care that they were getting in the way of people. You can imagine, you go down a road and all of a sudden there's big rocks in the road. He didn't care. People told him, hey, keep your rocks in your own property. Don't mess up the road. He says, don't tell me what to do. I'm clearing off my field and I'm just throwing them in the road. He only thought of himself. He didn't think of other people. One day, this farmer was working in his field, getting it ready for planting, throwing off the rocks into the road, not caring. And a man was walking by, an old man with a beard, And he says to the farmer, what are you doing throwing rocks from a field that's not yours into a road that belongs to you? Does that make sense? You're throwing off rocks from a field that doesn't belong to you, and you're throwing them into a road that belongs to you. What are you doing that for? Now the farmer thought, this is some kind of an old man who doesn't think too much or who doesn't have too much brains or something like that. And he says to the old man, that is a very foolish thing to say. It's the opposite. This is my field, and the road doesn't belong to anybody. So I'm clearing off my field, and I'm throwing off the rocks into a road that doesn't belong to anybody. I don't care what happens to the rocks. And the old man just shook his head, and he walked away, and the farmer was laughing, thinking that the old man was a fool. After a while, after a few days or a few weeks or a few months, things happened to the farmer. Little bit by little bit, he became poorer. And he had to sell things to get money. He had to sell furniture. He had to sell things that he had. His wife had to sell things. Finally, they had to sell their house and their fields because they became so poor. And he had to move into a little house somewhere else. And instead of working his own field, he had to work somebody else's field. He became a worker. Instead of a balabas on his own field, he became a worker for somebody else. He became so poor. And one night, after working a whole day from morning till night in the other field where he was working, he was walking home to his little house. And he was so tired. And he was going, it was dark already, and he was thinking about how it used to be so much better and how he lost everything. And all of a sudden, as he's going through the road, trying to get home, hungry and tired, all of a sudden he falls and trips over a rock in the road. And as he falls down, he hits himself against another rock in the road, and he hurts. He says, who put these rocks in the road? This is a terrible thing. I'm walking home from work. I'm tired. I'm hungry. And I have to walk in the road. And all of a sudden, there's big rocks in the road. Who could do such a thing? This is a road that people walk on, people use. I'm going home from a whole day of work. How else am I going to get home? I'm going on the road. Who could do such a thing? All of a sudden, as he picked himself up, he looked around where he was. The moon was shining, and he recognized he was right next to the field that he used to own. And these were the exact rocks that he himself had thrown into the road. And now he himself had fallen and hurt himself on his own rocks that he had thrown in the road. And all of a sudden he remembered the words of the old man. Why are you throwing rocks off of a field that doesn't belong to you into a road that does belong to you? And now he saw the old man was very, very smart. The field belonged to him then. Now it doesn't belong to him anymore. But the road that belongs to everybody also belongs to him. Everybody could walk in the road. And now the only thing that really belonged to him was the road, because he really had nothing else for himself. And he tripped and he fell over the rocks that he put on the road and himself. Now, of course, the main thing we learn from this story is that you don't just think about yourself. You think about others. Because you might do a thing, a selfish thing that now is good for you. Later on, it's going to backfire. And you're going to see that it's going to come back on you. You have to think what you do. Is it good for me and other people? Or Chas v'Shalom, is it making trouble for other people? This is a part of Avos Yisrael. And also Pashut, it's good midos not to just think of yourself all the time, but consider other people. Why did I tell the story just now? There's a certain reason why just now I told this story. Mendel? Okay, this boy is going to tell us the answer. Why I told this story now in class?
Because people had garbage on the floor and people could also flip on it. Very good. It was after recess. People had been eating and drinking different things and different juices and having bags of potato chips. And, of course, there is a certain place to put all of these things, and that's called the garbage can. Then your row is clean, and it's nice for you to sit in your row, and everybody else, it's nice for them also. Now, what happens if somebody has a juicy, and he has a bag of potato chips, and he's playing kugelach on the floor, or he's playing by his desk, or he's playing with his friends, and it's snack time, and it's recess time? Very fine. And then at the end of recess, I ring the bell a few times, say 1, 2, 3, we go back to our desks, all of a sudden we look on the floor, it's full of garbage. That means the boy left the garbage on the floor. He left it in a place that belongs really to other people, or maybe even himself, his own row. There's where the garbage is. And number one, it doesn't look nice. It's not covered for Hashem in his little Beis HaMikdash, which is his little classroom in Yeshiva, that he should have Chas Shalom garbage in there. It's not covered for Hashem. It's not covered for you. It's not nice for anyone else. So what should you do? Don't just think about yourself and throw your garbage wherever you want. You should get rid of it and put it in the garbage can. Like Yeshua said. Who knows if you might be walking and slipping on it or something like that. Or it's just not going to be nice for your row. Or maybe the principal will come in and all of a sudden say, look what I see in this row over here. And he sees the garbage. This is the way the classroom has to look. And it's the garbage that you left there. How are you going to feel? Wouldn't you feel much nicer if you had thrown it away? And then you're proud of your classroom and you're proud of your row and you feel like a mensch?